Well, hello there, everyone. It's Kristen Rodriguez with the Health Plan Alliance here, and I am the moderator for today's Value Call, which is a roundtable discussion where we invited individuals who are Medicare Advantage program managers or who have a similar role in your organization to come together for an open discussion with your alliance peers. We do not have a formal agenda for this call, nor do we have a formal presentation deck. So for those of you who are logged into the visual, you'll see that right now we have a housekeeping slide up, which says your webinar will begin soon. So in a moment, I'll go over some of those visual cues there, and we'll talk a little bit about do's and don'ts on our value calls. For those of you who are listening to the audio only and are not looking at the visual, it's okay. You're not really missing much, so don't worry. You can engage just as fully over the audio only. So for the moment, I have everyone's lines on mute because there was quite a bit of background chatter when I turned on the audio line. So I'm going to unmute everyone's line in just a moment. We, as of this moment, have about 20 individual phone lines on the call, and that number should be growing because we had over 60 people registered. So with that, let me go ahead and go over the technical do's and don'ts so that we have a really successful call and a really clean audio line as much as possible. So first and foremost, with the value call, we do unmute everyone's lines, which I will be doing in just a moment. And that means that any background noise going on in your room is, of course, going to go across the audio line. So if you're not engaging actively in the discussion, go ahead and use your mute button the good old-fashioned way. Just mute and unmute your phone there in person. Or if you prefer, you can use key commands to mute yourself over the platform. So star 6 is how you mute your line over our platform, and star 7 is how you unmute your line. So star 6 is quiet, star 7 is when you can speak. And you can use those buttons to toggle back and forth. Also, do not put your line on hold. If you need to step away from the call, just keep yourself on mute and nobody will be the wiser. If you place this on hold, then inevitably your lovely hold music comes across the call and everyone gets to listen to it until I find you and I mute you using the chairperson's controls. So please do avoid placing your call on hold. When we do unmute everyone's lines, there's a couple ways you can engage in the discussion. Of course, our hope is that folks will just speak up and will ask questions of one another, will share things that are on your mind. It's a very informal group, so you should feel very comfortable doing that. When you do so, please do tell us your name and what plan you're with, so that way we know who's talking and what's going on, because it'll take us some time to learn what everyone's voice sounds like over the audio. If you're not quite comfortable speaking up or feel like you want to kind of raise your hand quietly instead, if you're on the visual, you do have a few other options to engage. You can use the chat function. I am monitoring that. So if you want to ask a question of the group but prefer to do it via the chat and I can read that out on your behalf, I'm happy to do that. So feel free to make use of that at any time throughout the call. If you just need technical support or just have kind of a comment for me, then you can use the chat for that as well. I'm the only person that can read the chat on the call, so no other member will see your chat comments. And finally, there is a handy-dandy button at the top of your screen where you can raise your hand. So if you're not quite sure how to take yourself off mute or if you just kind of prefer that I call on you and invite you to speak up, you can absolutely use that raise your hand button, and I can do that. So those are all the technical how-tos to make the most of our platform here. So while I was rambling, hopefully everybody had taken that time to find their mute button. So I'm going to unmute everyone, and let's see how it goes. Here we go.
The conference has been unmuted.
All right. Professionals. Very nice, everyone. Great. So we have unmuted everyone's lines, which means that you are now in control of when you're muted and unmuted yourself. So with that, let's go ahead and get into the fun part of the call. So we scheduled this call on the request of one of our members, Caleb, who I hope is on the line, and in a moment I will ask him to share some of his perspectives. But we had had a recent value visit. It was our Medicare Advantage value visit, and of course had a number of individuals that act as Medicare Advantage program managers in their health plans. And Caleb, I know, and others felt that it would be really great to have an opportunity to continue the discussions around topics that are really important to this group throughout the year. So they had suggested that we look at introducing a standing value call for that group to come together at regular intervals and to just share and ask questions of one another. I will say that we do a similar service for another peer group. We do that for risk adjustment managers. And so what that group has in place is it's the last Friday of every single month we get on the phone for an hour, and there's never an agenda, and we always use the whole hour with lots of great questions and good conversation about topics that folks are wondering about, whether it's recommendations for vendors or if there's a question about a recent guideline from CMS, et cetera. So we can decide as a group if we do want to have regular calls at a regular interval and what the appropriate interval is. So be thinking about that. And if you prefer sharing your feedback on that with me more privately versus voicing it over the line, there's a couple ways to do that. When we disengage from today's call, there's an end of call survey that pops up on your computer screen. You can use that. Or you can always just email me directly. And if you don't know my email, then you can email us at info@healthplanalliance.org, and the team will send that over to me. So with that, Caleb, I hate to put you on the spot, but I'm absolutely going to do it. I would love it if you don't mind kicking us off with maybe what it is that you're hoping to get out of this call, and if you have a specific topic. Did you come to today's call with questions that you were excited to share with the group?
I don't have a lot of questions, but I have some examples of things that I think this group might be able to discuss and help each other out with. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, Caleb, you sound fine.
Okay, good. So I've followed the work that the coding work group has done and how open and the sheer volume of communication that group does, and I'm envious of it. And I was hoping to maybe create a similar dynamic with program managers from the different health plans so that we have somewhere to go with our questions. The work that we do isn't necessarily as, not streamlined, but with the coding work group, there's a more defined set of rules, I think is what I'm trying to say. They've got the same playing field they're trying to work with as far as submissions they have to make, the way the rules apply for risk adjustment, RAPS versus EDPS. And program managers, we have maybe a broader set of responsibilities, broader responsibility, but we don't get in always to as much detail as the coding group. But so the thought I had was the work that we do is still very cyclical. Every March through June, we're all absorbed in the bid. And every, November through February, if we're expanding our service area or going into a new market, we're absorbed in the application and the HSD tables and making sure all of that's done. And so I'm just wondering if we can have a series of calls where we come together and talk through the issues we're having in each of the areas. For example, we are almost certain that we are going to expand in 2019. Now, we may be expanding in adjacent counties to our existing geography. So those are pretty simple. We just do a service area expansion. But if we move into a new market where we haven't had any presence before, the first question I'm trying to answer is, do we want a new contract or do we want to expand our existing contract? And what are the pros and cons of that? Is this new market, are the members generally compliant and happy with their health plans? Will they give us good feedback and help our star ratings? Or will they have the opposite effect? If they're going to help our star rating, maybe the same contract and just expanding makes sense. And if not, then maybe we need to create a new entity for a new contract. And I would really, really appreciate different people's opinions on something like that, what they see as the pros and cons of different approaches. And I think that there are others that could benefit from that discussion and others like it when we say, okay, the notice of intent to apply is due in November. Let's have a November call about people who think they're applying for an expansion or a new contract. So, again, just one example. I think we have a lot to talk about that we could put on the calendar and have calls around those different topics.
This is Sinead at Health Alliance. I think that's a great idea. I know as we look at network adequacy and, you know, there's innovative options we're trying to do around high-performing networks or triple option or different types of networks to meet adequacy, we think that in particular would be of interest, and the timing would be good. Obviously, you've got to be contracting well before November, but at least kind of those discussions could be had at that time.
Yeah, I think that's another one that's on our list of things to try to figure out. And maybe that one does come pre-November. Maybe that's a September call, and then in November we talk about the application specifically, and then I don't know. Another thing that's complicated, and this I was trying to get at this, but I was having a hard time describing it. With the Alliance work, with the coding work group, the reason I was saying some of their stuff is more defined, with program managers, that job description changes very much from plan to plan. What a program manager is responsible for is not usually the same, you know, when you look at different health plans, whereas maybe whoever's in charge of risk adjustment, maybe it's located in different departments, but the responsibilities are maybe less variable from plan to plan. So I think it could be hard to get all of the program managers interested in one set of topics, but that doesn't mean we don't still canvas the group and say, what does the group want to talk about? Let's take the top 7 or 8 things and try to plan for those.
That's really great. Hey, Deb Curry, are you on the audio line? I see you on the visual.
I am on the audio. I just was going to unmute and say something until you asked if I was here.
I'm melding. Deb, I wonder if you wouldn't mind sharing, just for folks who aren't familiar with the risk adjustment group, I agree with Caleb. I mean, the topics are different, but just in terms of having that standing call, you know, we meet every month, and from a member perspective, what it is that you like about it, because I know you're great. I don't think you've missed any of them.
I try not to. And I'm also, Caleb, a part of the coding one as well, so I can talk to both of them. And I think the structure that we have on the coding call is because by nature as a coder there's official coding guidelines, there's rules and regulations that we have to follow, and so that is going to have structure by definition in and of itself of the nature of what we do. However, when we're doing the risk adjustment manager, we're just like, it's a hodgepodge, and I guess that's the best way to say it, but it's a productive hodgepodge where we can go anywhere from, we do bring up code sometimes. We bring up third-party administrators. We bring up bid season. We talk about that as well. I mean, that's come up. So analytics, what is the best route? And so I think that if we all just maybe start, like I wrote down as you were talking, you said bid, you said or what is important. So I wrote CMS mumbo jumbo. That's my, when CMS comes out with something and we all can interpret it differently, maybe we bring it together to this group to say, well, what does that mean to you? AEP is coming up. That's another big, I think it would be program manager, that affects all parties. And so in our room right now, we have represented it here at Paramount. We have analytics. We have DSS, which is our decision support. We have marketing. We have compliance. I'm from risk. We had somebody from finance on the call, but unfortunately Chris is finance. You're taking, okay. So, because Stacy, I invited Stacy, but she's that's our VP of finance, so Chris is representing finance. But I think you can turn it into an interdisciplinary meeting where we talk about a lot of different things that affect everybody. I think the only person we're missing in here is quality, because quality is a big piece of what we do. So we invited them. They said no.
I am quality.
So I just think that you can take this, and it would be so beneficial, because I think we're all struggling with the same things. I had an email spiel that went through with some of my coding friends, and we were all basically, I don't want to say complaining. Complaining is not the right word.
Dialoguing.
We were dialoguing, thank you, dialoguing about the IVA process and how CMS has changed it already in the 3 months that we're involved, and we still don't have our results from the benefit year 2015 SVA. So, I mean, we could maybe have an agenda if you felt that was necessary, or we could just throw out concerns as we move forward. But I think it is beneficial to have the interaction. I think the more interaction that we have, the more people who are willing to speak and maybe not give specifics, but speak to subject matter, I think it would really help the whole entire team.
Thanks, Deb. I think that's wonderful. So we did set up an hour for today's call, and we're about 15 minutes in, and I think that rather than put the pressure on the group to have to decide, you know, in this moment, how often do we want to meet and what do we want that structure to be, I think what I'd like to do is invite people to think about that, because those standing calls with the risk adjustment group, you know, what really makes those successful at the end of the day is that people attend them. So, I mean, I from the Alliance, our job is to provide you guys this forum. And so if this group wants to meet monthly, then we will absolutely host that call for you guys and do all the legwork to get it done. And if you want to meet a little less frequently, then we'll make that work too. So I'll put together a really brief just follow-up survey, like three questions, you know, and just send that out to folks who registered for today's call. And then that way you can think through, you know, what it is that you feel like you can commit to, and then also what you think you're going to get the value out of. Because some people really do appreciate knowing what the topics are, and without knowing that, it's hard to commit the time. We have other peer groups that that's the case. So it gives folks that chance to consider what it is that you need, and then we can compile that feedback and we can go from there. The coding work group took a few months, you know, of back and forth discussion before it was stood up. You know, it took a lot of legwork just to get it up and running. So that's completely fine. So what I'd like to propose for the remaining of today's call then is to turn our attention to where people's heads are at. We have a lot of folks on today's call that I think this might actually be their first call. So you have on the line 33 free consultants that you can ask any question you want to ask about Medicare Advantage and what's on your plate right now. So if anyone has a question that's really eating at them tonight when they go to bed and they want to raise it for other people, now's a great time. Does anyone have a topic they want to raise for the group for feedback?
Hello?
Great. Ooh, that.
So my name is Marina. I'm in Metro Plus, and one of the questions I have, thank you so much for setting this up. I think this is great, and I look forward to joining more of these discussions. One of the measures that I'm very interested in is the BAP, the Beneficiary Access, and I just wanted to get information on how other organizations do internal audits and track their progression. I mean, ultimately, everybody wants their 5 stars, but with the BAP, everything in the marketing materials is connected to the BAP. So I just wanted to see how everyone works their BAP measure.
Okay, I'll jump in. Hi, Marina. This is Mike Van Rysen with Presbyterian.
Hello.
My understanding of the BAP measure on the STAR plan is a couple of things. One, any, you know, you always start out at that 100, and you can only lose points. But
right.
That's generally how we get the information here, because I track all the STAR measures, and our compliance person lets me know anytime we get any letters or anytime we get any of that. So as we look at that, I was a little surprised to see the BAP measure in plan preview 1. My understanding from the updates that went out back in April is it was being removed. So it may end up being removed for 2019 STARS, but it's still out there for this one. but my understanding is that CMS is retooling the whole measure. So that the question may be a little bit moot at this point as they retool that measure and then track some data, because I believe that one of the things they want to do is move it from a January to December measure, is move it to a July to June, so it's much more current with the star thresholds and everything. And then it also wants to do some other things too, so you don't get so plans may not end up getting double hit in terms of the measure, particularly if you have an audit done, because I know that was one of the concerns that CMS was looking to alleviate.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So I use HPMS and I run the compliance memos against it. Like you said, you know, we got a letter or two, and I want to know, like, my question is, like, I want to go ahead of CMS and know that, you know, where we're in need of more assistance, or where we need, where we might be cited. So before we get the citation, I want to be the one to say, and that's challenging with the BAP measure, but if it's removed in 2018, that would be great.
Other feedback from Marina from the group? All right, that was great. Mike, thank you. Thanks for that insight.
So much.
Does anyone else have a topic for the group that they want to raise?
We do. This is Paramount, but I'm going to let Dan speak to it.
Go first, and then the person who said I do, who was that?
That was Amy at Health New England.
Got it. Okay, Amy, I got you next. All right, go ahead, Deb.
We were wondering here at Paramount, what do other plans and other carriers do relative to AEP regulatory documents? Do you edit them all yourselves? Do you use any of the purchase services or software that is available? If so, have you found there's a lot of ROI on that? Is there any kind of accuracy issues that you face with that?
Ironically, Amy's going to answer your question, I think. Amy, is this related to what the Most Group is doing for you guys over at Health New England? Do I understand the question right?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
So I think she's asking Amy.
Oh. Uh-oh. I don't know if we lost Amy at Health New England. I don't know if she hung up and discussed.
Can you hear me?
Go a second. Yeah, there you are.
Can you hear me? Sorry.
Yeah, Amy.
I'm getting my sixes and my sevens all mixed up. Sorry. Okay.
No worries.
Yes. Amy from Health of England. Sorry about that. So, yeah, so we this is the first year that we are using the Most Group, who is a vendor who is putting together our regulatory documents for us. So they're doing our ANOCs, our EOCs, our summary of benefits. So we onboarded probably in February. So through the last few months, we have been going through mapping, because the way it works is they are actually taking our information from our PDP software and using that to map directly into the ANOC, the EOC, and the summary of benefits. It's been going extremely well. I mean, right now we are in the process of quality checking everything. So, of course, you know, they've done all the mapping and they've put together the documents for us, but everybody knows at the end of the day we're responsible for those documents. So we're going through and verifying all of the information that they have done to make sure everything looks correct. And so far we're having great results with it. I mean, it is time-consuming kind of just to look through, because it is our first year. We want to make sure everything does look correct, but it's really looking good and been a rewarding process for us. But it's a small group of us, I will say, that do this. I mean, I'm not sure what other plans do, if they have departments, but honestly, it's myself that really, and I think Caleb, I think you do the same thing. I think you work on a lot of these documents, checking them over, and one person in marketing and one person in compliance. So it's really a three-person team that's going through all of these documents on the weekend and at night to make sure everything looks correct. Does that kind of answer your question of what we're doing as a plan? Sure.
Amy, this is Scott from Health Alliance. How many plans are they creating for you? How many AMOCs and EOCs are they creating for you?
They, 1, 2, 3, 4, they are creating five for us right now, and then once we're done with this, we're going to move on to our egg whips, and we will have 8 separate ones that they will be creating for our egg whips, so 13 altogether.
Thank you.
Yep.
So as Amy mentioned, I haven't had to do as much with the ANOC EOC this year, but we still do ours manually, and I've talked to her about the MOST group and others that perform this function, you know, help create templates and simplify the process and make it more error-proof. And we absolutely love the idea, but we're still doing ours manually. We are about to complete, this Friday, we'll have final sign-off on 7 ANOC EOC documents. I think if we expanded beyond that, I don't know how we would do it manually anymore with the staff we have dedicated to it today. So we're
this
definitely
is Kristen, the Alliance.
Option.
Yeah, just want to chime in that Amy and the MOST group did a presentation at our Medicare Advantage Value Visit in Wisconsin. So for folks who weren't able to join us, you can grab that off of the archives on the event calendar, and Amy shared her before picture and her after picture. And then the Alliance, we are in active discussions with the MOST group to negotiate a GPO contract because we're aware that a lot of member plans are, you know, looking for vendors that do this. So I don't know yet, you know, the timeline on when we anticipate that we may have a discount negotiated for you guys, but we are working on it actively with them. Having said that, are there others in the line that use other vendors or are looking at other vendors or have other feedback for Paramount as they consider this? All right. Well, Amy, now it's your turn.
Thank you. So my question is about the diabetes prevention program. So it seems like there's changes that keep coming about in terms of deadlines, and I'm just curious as to how other plans are approaching implementing this requirement for the diabetes prevention program. Are you doing it internally, or are you outsourcing it, and who are you outsourcing it with? How are you finding them, or are they coming to you? So I'm just kind of curious as to what experience you've been having trying to get this up and running for next year.
This is Cheryl from Senior Preferred Support Association.
Are we there?
Any feedback for Amy, folks?
Yes, this is Cheryl from Senior Preferred Quartz Health Solutions.
Hi, Cheryl.
Hi. So the diabetes prevention program, what I've looked into is in our community, the YMCA is the only one that's been approved through the CDC. And our health system currently has a partnership through the YMCA under it's called a Healthy Living Program. And we have a handful of other programs that we work through and collaborate with the Y on. Well, this is one, the prevention program, that we do not have that connection. So right now I'm working on establishing that relationship. And really what it'll allow us to do is reach out into some of the rural communities where we have providers, but the YMCA is not there. So that's my approach on getting something started, and our philosophy has always been to furnish some of these prevention programs in-house versus outsourcing or reaching beyond our network of providers. So thank you.
Thank you.
So that's actually the exact topic I was going to bring up. This is Caleb again with Select Health. In our, so we have plans in Utah and Idaho. In Utah, there are exactly zero approved plans or approved DPP providers today. So there really is no one that we even could contract with, whether they were aligned or not with our plan. So we reached out to our regional office and said, there's no one in our state. We want to be able to work with our integrated providers who are working on the program, but they just barely started gathering data. They've got to have a year of data before they can even submit, right? And then the process for approval by the CDC is I don't know how long. So we were asking for permission to use that program since we have to have something and there's nothing else available. Our regional office said they absolutely understand where we're coming from, but they don't feel they can give that permission. So they directed us to the Part C policy mailbox to see what they have to say. So that's the situation we're in Utah. In Idaho, there are a couple of vendors, but I don't think they're a little bit smaller. I don't think that they could even handle the volume. So in both of our service areas, we've got access issues. We don't have providers that can provide the benefit. So we have to figure out from CMS, what do they want us to do to fill in that gap? Has anyone else seen that?
This is Sinead at Health Alliance. We have, you know, we don't have full coverage, and one of the questions that we had was the ability to provide it online. And wasn't there a request for information to delay it till April? Because the fee-for-service Medicare was having similar issues. Just don't know if everybody saw that on the diabetes prevention program, to delay it, even though it's all in our members' materials, obviously based on the bid.
Yeah, I saw that, and that's good that it buys us a few more months, but where we can see which vendors are on the CDC registry,
yeah,
as pending, but we can't see when they may or may not be approved, so I don't know that we would have providers by then. But, yeah, you're right. We saw that as well, the delay. So now we've got EOCs going out to all of our members talking about a benefit that doesn't exist yet.
Right.
And this is Amy. I have another follow-up question to that. I'm also confused as have they even issued the applications for facilities or people to become an MDPP provider? I can't seem to find the answer to that one either. I feel like they haven't. Like, the application is going to come out around January, but I can't find any language to talk about when the application to actually become one is going to come out. Or has it already? Does anybody know?
I haven't seen anything like that, other than what I remember reading is that they're going to lean on the CDC methodology, and basically if the CDC says you're all right, because the CDC was, they're following the CDC program, so if you're approved by the CDC, then there was going to be a streamlined Medicare enrollment process.
There is.
But
okay, that's what I was.
The application itself I haven't seen.
Okay. Thank you.
Great discussion, gang.
And I should also note that the CDC did a presentation for us. It may be a little dated now, but that's also archived on our calendar, where they talked through their YMCA program. So we have some information from the leaders at CDC that presented that to our members a number of months ago. While folks are thinking of other questions. Oh, go ahead.
So one more thing. Sorry, this is Amy again. I don't know if anybody saw, CMS recently did a webinar on the program, and they gave a lot more information about how the payment methodology of how they're going to pay for these sessions. It was a really good slideshow. I can send you the link to it if anybody else wants to take a look, but we got a lot of information from it.
Amy, will you send that to me? It's Kristen, and then I can post it as a link for folks who may not have ready access to it.
Sure, absolutely.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yep.
So while that conversation was going on, a question did come in over chat, so I'm going to go ahead and read that one out, and then definitely, you know, that we have time probably for two or three more topics before we hit our time today. So this question was, regarding network adequacy, has another group heard details regarding the proposal that MA plans submit full HSD tables starting this September? We understand that this has been open for public comment, but are trying to determine actual implementation date. Any feedback for this individual?
I thought that was another RFI request, Decision Aid at Health Alliance, regarding what should trigger full network review, because there are like three or four items that require that, and looking to go to every 3 year at least. I don't know if that's what this person is referring to. Perhaps not.
I think that's great, Sinead. Thank you. Any more clarifying follow-up questions on that topic or responses on that topic?
Was that touching? There was a proposal, though, to make that like an annual audit or a periodic audit item instead of making you submit the full network for a contract expansion. Is that what we're talking about?
That's what I thought they were talking about. I can send the RFI to Kristen if you want it, if that's what they're referring to, because it would go to what, every three-year review?
That's right.
Is that what you're recalling too?
Yep. And I don't know what if that has been approved, though. I don't think it's approved. I thought it was just proposed, but we are supportive of that. I mean, it's great. They need to do the network adequacy checks, right? But every time you want to, you know, if you want to expand every year or, I don't know, it doesn't necessarily make sense attached to the application to expand.
Because other people get under the wire then. You know, you already have all your counties and then you never get looked at.
Would the provider directory fall under the network adequacy? Because now that they're going through our provider directories,
I would see that as separate but related.
Correct, yeah.
Scott, I don't know if you know this answer because, you know, I just assume that you inhale the regs and you know them by heart. But now that the directory's moved from the marketing chapter and now it deals with beneficiary harm, that means that audit would relate to inadequacy, right? It could be a finding, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That's a good question. You know, I'm going to ask our good friend Shelley over at Change Healthcare what she thinks.
Yeah.
She did a presentation on this, but I don't think that precise question came up. I'm gonna make a note of that one, and if I find out anything interesting, I'll send it back to the group.
Now, since we're – this is Marina from MetroPlus – if we're in the provider directory topic, it was touched, how is – I read in our marketing materials, the updated one, that supposedly we have to contact our providers quarterly to make sure the directory information is up to date. And my question is – could it be their profiles and CAQH, or does anybody know if we have to call them? What kind of contact does it have to be to update their information quarterly?
As I appreciate it, they don't define what type of outreach. They leave that up to the plan, but a lot of other groups are using CAQH profiles, and CAQH has been – you know, doing webinars on how to sell additional outreach that they will let you pay for, that they'd be willing to contact the providers themselves. That's assuming that all of your providers have CAQH and you don't have any delegated credentialing agreements. If you have delegated credentialing agreements, you might not be able to get that data in that specified amount of time.
Thank you.
Well, so is Dan at Paramount has a question, and it's his birthday.
Hey, happy birthday, Dan.
Thanks, guys. I was just wondering what other plans are doing relative to broker commission. Are you automating it? Are you doing it manually? Are you doing Excel spreadsheets for tracking? And if you're doing it manually, do you find the oversight of that that part of that scary for a CMS audit? And are you looking at changing your process now?
They're lighting the candles.
Hi, I'll jump in on this one. This is Amy again from Health New England. Currently we are doing it via spreadsheets because we don't have very many brokers that we work with within our plan. So it is a very manual process, albeit it's a small one at the moment. But there is definitely talk of we can't sustain this for very long if we want to, you know, grow our broker relationship. So we are currently looking at how to take this from a manual process into an automated one so we can get away from any compliance issues or just the time it takes to keep it up and manage it manually.
Dan, how many brokers does Paramount have?
Right now we have 120 licensed brokers. We also have two general agent agreements, one with Towers and another general agency that we work with.
Got it. Okay. And Caleb, who's the person at Select Health? I know it's not you, but is it Brent Hess? Is that who I'm thinking that manages your broker channel?
It is Brent Hess, and you will find no one better at it. Except any of you good people on the phone who do it, you're better at it. But other than that, no one else.
Yeah, Dan, Brent Hess, we did a call a while ago, but Brent, I remember, just started rambling about all of these amazing things that he's doing over at Select Health. So I'll grab his contact info, but it's also on the directory. So really generous with his time. I know he'd be happy to geek out with you if you want to talk about that stuff with him.
Yeah, I really can't stress enough. He is, it's almost scary how good he is at managing broker relationships.
That's fantastic. Thanks, guys.
Happy birthday, Dan.
Thank you very much.
All right. Other topics for the group.
Hi, this is Cheryl again, Senior Preferred Quartz Health Solutions. And the question that I have is, so I'm looking at our phone coverage for customer service and looking at our preliminary results coming in from CMS, and there's some room for improvement. I've been looking at the call center language, TTY, and it appears that after 5 o'clock, the process that we have in place is not perhaps working very well at, you know, taking care of those calls. We don't have a lot of calls. Probably more calls than not are probably CMS calls after 5. We started out when CMS changed that we had to have customer service open later. We started out, we used a vendor 1 year, and then the second year we did it in-house and had customer service in-house doing it, and then we quickly found that they didn't have anything to do. They were bored. And then we switched over to using customer service using cell phones after 5, where the calls would go into the queue, and then it would go over to cell phones. And looking at our data, I think we need to find a different solution. So just curious what other people are doing during that time, the later hours.
Cheryl, this is Deb at Paramount, and we actually have our phone coverage here until 8 p.m., so I know we expanded that, you know, so that they're not going right to the TTY, but we have, like, Ohio Relay for our TTY after 8 p.m., and I can't get specifics on numbers for you because our member service folks are not here, but I'd be happy to ask her as far as how busy they are from, say, 5 to 8, if they can track that in a percentage-wise. So I think that they have just cut, they did the different shifts so that we have somebody here until 8.
Okay, so you have it. You have a, someone in-house at the call center staffed for that, right?
Correct.
Is anyone else using? Is anyone else using any option like cell phones or anything like that? Yeah. Hello.
Hi there. I thought somebody was going to answer. Any other feedback for Cheryl about call center after 5? Creative solutions folks put in place? Or does anyone vend out because it's not enough traffic and it's a little bit more efficient and has had a good experience about it?
Hi, this is Gretchen with People's Health. We actually have staff.
Hi.
We have staff internally that answer calls till 8 p.m., and we also contract with an external call center that takes any overflow. And we only failed 2 calls this measure this year, so that worked for us.
Is your traffic really high at that time, Gretchen, or is it lower traffic?
It's lower traffic. We get the majority calls during the day, but they will test you after 5 p.m. And we contract with Dial America.
Oh, great. Thanks. And everybody, I should mention that People's Health is a prospective member plan, and they're testing us out and experiencing it. They were with us in Wisconsin. So thank you so much, everyone, for being on your good behavior today. I appreciate that. You know, Cheryl, there's one other person that I'm thinking of. Well, one, I think this would be a really great discussion forum question because it's a really specific question. So so if you feel like you want to get some more ideas, I would encourage you to post it on the discussion forum, and then you can pull in your customer service peer group as well as the Medicare peer group and see, you know, what kind of call volume people are experiencing it and different solutions that they have for managing it if they're not getting enough, you know, to staff people in-house that time. And then my second idea is Michelle, whose last name is escaping me because I'm not infallible, but Michelle at Presbyterian was a great resource. She runs their call center, and they do a lot of really creative things. They have a fully integrated customer service center with their providers, and so they do a lot of things beyond just the traditional, you know, call center customer service stuff. And so so they figured out how to repurpose call center staff in really interesting ways. So I'll find
Michelle
her
Jones
number
Christian.
For you.
It's Michelle.
Oh,
Jones.
Mike, that's right. You're on the phone. Mike, what do you think about that from Presbyterian? I forgot you're here. No, that's right. Mike, what do you think about that?
I don't deal that much with the call center, so I can't speak to. I know that you know, we do have a fully integrated, like you had said, a fully integrated call center that we, you know, we staff until 8 o'clock for Medicare and meet all the other requirements for Medicaid and all of that and have it broken down into, you know, whether we're making doing appointments for the clinic, doing appointments for whatever, or answering calls and the like. Our numbers for the STAR measures went up this year. I mean, we saw quite a nice increase. So it would be Michelle Jones would be the person to talk to here at Press.
Yeah, our Part D measure went down like really, really low. And I'm thinking that it's the cell phone. They switched to using cell phones, and it appears like we had like 14 dropped or disconnected calls, so they experienced difficulty transferring it to a translator is what I'm expecting that, you know, from looking into things. So we definitely need to figure out a new plan. Thank you.
Hi. So I feel like a lot of plans now got cited for drop calls. I've been going through our reporting, and I've noticed, so I'll be looking through our phone records to understand how these and when these phone calls were dropped and why. So I'm thinking perhaps it's a possibility that CMS had it, similar issue. Maybe their phones were dropping that day. So that's the I'm doing that research to see maybe it's not us, it's them. I highly doubt it, but I'm trying.
So who is this?
I'm so sorry. This is Marina from Metro Plus.
Okay. Because the other thing is we're looking at the calls, and so we're Central Standard Time, and mm-hmm. it says it on the columns when I go through it, mm-hmm. and the times are clearly not Central Standard Time because they're after 8 o'clock. There's like 8:30 and stuff. So I'm guessing what they're referencing was Eastern Standard Time, so there's an hour difference. But still, taking that hour difference, we're having a problem matching up the actual call to find the call that they're saying that we didn't follow through on. So hopefully you're right.
I would possibly contact the call center and see if you could speak to somebody. I have a contact there who I call and ask questions to, or I email. Mm-hmm. And she's very responsive, so maybe you should send an email explaining that to them, and
okay.
they'll work with you. They're very, it's a small team, and they work with me whenever I have questions.
Okay, thank you.
Welcome.
Marina, I'm sorry, this is a question from Kristen at the Alliance. So are you suggesting that Cheryl reach out independently to see if she can kind of establish her own contact? Or Cheryl, maybe you already have a contact?
I have an email to them. It's the one, it's the public email. It's the call center monitoring at cms.hhs.gov. They're responsible.
Got it. They're really good at responding to inquiries there.
Oh, they respond right, under like 12 hours, like in a business day, they usually respond. They're very good.
Fabulous. I totally, like what I was hearing you say was like, I got a guy, you know, and I'm like, really? You got a guy?
Oh, absolutely not. No, I wish. No, it's just that email, and, you know, it's usually the same person that responds or different people, but they're so good. The emails are long, and they're very detailed on, you know, because I'm new to this, so they explain a lot because I ask. So I think that might be a good idea to ask about.
Cool. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
All right. So just doing a quick time check here. We have 8 minutes left to us. So that does mean that if there's one other topic somebody wants to raise, we probably have time for one other topic before I switch gears into housekeeping mode. So I want to open that up for the group.
Go for it, Jean. What are the biggest reconciliation challenges, RAP, CDPS, that people are running up against? I mean, obviously driving process and is the key to explaining dropouts from start to finish. I'm just wondering what people's biggest pain points are and how they're resolving it.
This is Kristen. Was that Paramount?
Yes, this is Jean speaking.
Fabulous. Hi, Jean. Okay, feedback for Jean. I know that speaking from the Alliance's perspective, we've had a lot of activity in our risk adjustment group, and just those value calls set aside, we've had a lot of just webinars on this topic. In fact, we have one coming up dealing with the reconciliation between RAPs and ES data. Are there folks on the line that wear a risk adjustment hat that are with us today, or do we have only non-risk adjustment folks or folks that are kind of only slightly aware of this effort going on in their plan?
This is Jean again, because it's not just because I don't think it's just it's risk, but you know,
it's finance.
I facilitate an intercompany meeting that coordinates all teams as far as how it affects risk and making sure that they understand and on board with the impact their role is to the downstream effect of claims getting into the government. So it's not it's the whole process through claims where they drop out even before they get submitted in the extracts, and then start to finish end to end where they're falling out, and reconciling them back, whether it's a claims issue or a membership issue. I'm just wondering, feedback from various departments within your organizations and how they're responding back, as well as just the start to finish process of an extract and drop out of claims through that process and what ultimately gets submitted to the government.
And if it'll help facilitate the conversation, we can give you a perfect example. We had a reconciliation meeting yesterday where we met with a team of analysts as well as our reconciliation specialists, and one of the issues came up is if it's a member error, kind of like your STIRS, it will eventually resolve itself, so hold it and let it resolve itself. But I'm like, I'm the risk person going, wait a minute, I don't want to hold it and miss a sweep. I want to get it resolved now. But then they're like, yeah, but if you just wait, it'll resolve itself and the people don't have to do the work. And I'm like, well, I want a happy medium. I want to get it resolved and get it submitted and get it accounted for as soon as we can. So that brought up conversation amongst our own internal team, and this team that Jean leads has claims, member services, QI, IT, case management, compliance,
membership,
pharmacy. It's an interdisciplinary we call it our risk work group, and it's been very beneficial, but this new reconciliation piece we're going to add to the risk work group.
That is helpful. Do other people have a group like that or a committee that comes together to talk through these? Or do you have somebody who really owns it in your plan? How are you guys addressing this? You know what it is, Jean, that you got the last question spot of the hour. That's what it is. So I can say that, and I'm going to slaughter his last name, but Rick Alexionik with SumaCare, he is the manager of their reconciliation unit, and he has an IT background, but does a lot more than that. And I'll send you his email, because he's done some case studies on what he does at SumaCare. He likens himself to Chicken Little. he's the one who's like, really, we have to pay attention to this. So he's spoken at our risk management events. He's also spoken at our risk adjustment events, and really has a lot of passion and insight into, you know, where he thinks plans need to be focusing their attention. They've hand built a lot of their own reports for ongoing monitoring. So I think Rick would be somebody that could help you kind of jumpstart a conversation around this.
And then definitely,
you know, we can raise the question to a larger group, because it may be that we need a different peer group on the phone than just the MA program managers.
And maybe we can bring that up Friday. Are you on that call with me?
I don't know, but
we can bring it up Friday.
So that's right, because I'm going to talk to you again on Friday, Deb. It's awesome.
I know, and that's Thursday.
Yes. That's right. I'm here all week. I'm
here
calls
all
every day. So with that, we have 2 minutes left to us, and it is important to me that we always end on time. So let me go ahead and kind of transition us into housekeeping mode. So for those of you who've hung on for the whole call, when you hang up, for those of you who are on the visual, there will be a one question survey that pops up. Go ahead and take a minute just to write in there if you would like to do a standing call and kind of what frequency feels good to you, or any other just off the cuff feedback. And I will send a more formal follow up asking folks to give structured feedback. But what we did today is really what the risk adjustment group does. So we don't have an agenda, and we just let people throw questions out there, which there's good things about that, because, you know, you just, whatever it is that you're working on that week, you can immediately get a temperature check, so to speak. And then there's also obviously a lot of benefit that comes with doing structure as well. So be noodling on that and what you think makes the most sense for you, and also kind of how often coming together with this group makes sense for you. And that feedback is going to really help us just figure out how to best serve this peer group. I did take a few notes on some follow-up items that folks will send me, so I'll keep my eyes out. So Sinead, Amy, and I think maybe I had one or two others. And then I'll pull all of that together and include that so that folks want to going to access any of these resources that were mentioned, they can do that. So with that, I hope everyone has a fantastic afternoon. Thank you so much for joining us. I hope the call was valuable, and I'm sure that I will talk with many of you very soon on an upcoming event. Have a great afternoon, everybody.
You too. Thank you.
Thanks, Kristen.